Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, y'all. Hope you're good and sleepy. Welcome back to another episode of Southern Sleep Stories. I'm Brandon, and I'll be your sleep swami for the night. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, what I'll do is start off with some tips to get you nice and calm, then slowly read an old story on top of some relaxing music, then let that music fade to complete silence. Any ads or sponsorships to help out the show will happen only after the intro and before the relaxation begins. This will ensure that your sleep will be uninterrupted. If you like true crime, check out my other show, Music City 911, on YouTube or any podcast app. Let's make sure you're all set up for a great night's sleep. If you're listening on YouTube or a podcast app, turn off the setting for autoplay, so you won't be woke by other sounds once the episode is over. Set the temperature in your house to the most comfortable for you. If you like sleeping with a fan on, turn it to your most desirable setting. Turn all your lights out. Turn your TV off. Make sure your room and surroundings are as silent as you can make them. Now crawl into bed. Make sure you're using your covers and pillow in the most comfy way possible. Now to start, rid yourself of all your thoughts from the day. Anything bad or good that you have had happen during the day, let those fade away, and instead, concentrate only on these relaxation instructions. If you still have thoughts in your head, repeat slowly over and over for 10 seconds. Don't think. Don't think. Don't think. Now close your eyes. Take a breath in and slowly exhale. Let those previous thoughts leave your body as you exhale. Imagine yourself in the most calming and serene environment possible. Calm your body. Relax every part. I want you to start shutting down each part of your body from top to bottom. The top of your head and your forehead. Relax those muscles. Let yourself feel them change from tense to relaxed. Relax your eyes. Do the same with your cheeks. feel them fall as the tension leaves them. Now relax your jaw. Let your teeth slightly separate as you do this. Now let your shoulders drop as low as possible. And while doing that, let your arms, hands, and fingers all relax and loosen. Take another breath and think about your chest calming as you exhale slowly. Now relax your stomach, your legs, your knees, and your feet, all the way down to your toes. Now that you're fully relaxed, let's listen to Angela by William Schwenk Gilbert, published in the Century Magazine, September 1890. I'm a poor paralyzed fellow who, for many years past, has been confined to a bed or a sofa. For the last 6 years, I've occupied a small room, giving onto one of the side canals of Venice, and having no one about me but a deaf old woman who makes my bed and attends to my food. And there, I eke out a poor income of about £30 a year by making watercolor drawings of flowers and fruit. They are the cheapest models in Venice, and these I send to a friend in London who sells them to a dealer for small sums. But on the whole, I am happy and content. It is necessary that I should describe the position of my room rather minutely. Its only window is about 5 feet above the water of the canal, and above it, the house projects some 6 feet and overhangs the water, the projecting portion being supported by stout piles driven into the bed of the canal. This arrangement has the disadvantage, among others, of so limiting my upward view that I am unable to see more than about 10 feet of the height of the house immediate opposite of me, although by reaching as far out of the window as my infirmity will permit, I can see a considerable distance up and down the canal, which does not exceed 15 feet in width. But, although I can see but little of the material house opposite, I can see its reflection upside down in the canal, and I can take a good deal of inverted interest in such of its inhabitants as show themselves from time to time, always upside down, on its balconies and its windows. When I first occupied my room, about 6 years ago, my attention was directed to the reflection of a little girl of 13 or so, as nearly as I could judge, who passed every day on a balcony just above the upward range of my limited field of view. She had a glass of flowers and a crucifix on a little table by her side. As she sat there, in fine weather, from early morning until dark, working assiduously all the time, I concluded that she earned her living by needlework. She was certainly an industrious little girl, and, as far as I could judge by her upside-down reflection, neat in her dress and pretty. She had an old mother, an invalid, who, on warm days, would sit on the balcony with her, and it interested me to see the little maid wrap the old lady in shawls and bring pillows for her chair and a stool for her feet, and every now and again lay down her work and kiss and fondle the old lady for half a minute, then take up her work again. Time went by, and as the little maid grew up, her reflection grew down, and at last she was quite a little woman of, I suppose, 16 or 17. I can only work for a couple of hours or so in the brightest part of the day, so I had plenty of time on my hands in which to watch her movements, and sufficient imagination to weave a little romance about her, and to endow her with a beauty which, to a great extent, I had to take for granted. I saw, or fancied that I could see, that she began to take an interest in my reflection, which, of course, she could see as I could see hers. And one day, when it appeared to me that she was looking right at it, that is to say, when her reflection appeared to be looking right at me, I tried the desperate experiment of nodding to her. And to my intense delight, her reflection nodded in reply. And so our two reflections became known to one another. It did not take me very long to fall in love with her, but a long time passed before I could make up my mind to do more than nod to her every morning when the old woman moved me from my bed to the sofa at the window, and again in the evening when the little maid left the balcony for the day. One day, however, when I saw her reflection looking at mine, I nodded to her and threw a flower into the canal. She nodded several times in return, and I saw her direct her mother's attention to the incident. Then every morning, I threw a flower into the water for good morning, and another in the evening for good night. And I soon discovered that I had not altogether thrown them in vain, for one day, she threw a flower to join mine, and she laughed and clapped her hands when she saw the two flowers join forces and float away together. And then every morning and every evening, she threw her flower when I threw mine, and when the two flowers met, she clapped her hands, and so did I. But when they were separated, as they sometimes were, owing to one of them having met an obstruction which did not catch the other, she threw up her hands in a pretty affectation of despair, which I tried to imitate, but in an English and unsuccessful fashion. And when they were rudely run down by a passing gondola, which happened not infrequently, she pretended to cry, and I did the same. Then, in pretty pantomime, she would point downwards to the sky to tell me that it was destiny that had caused the shipwreck of her flowers, and I, in pantomime, not nearly so pretty, would try to convey to her that destiny would be kinder next time, and that perhaps tomorrow our flowers would be more fortunate. And so the innocent courtship went on. One day, she showed me her crucifix and kissed it, and thereupon, I took a little silver crucifix that always stood by me and kissed that, and so she knew that we were one in religion. One day, the little maid did not appear on our balcony, and for several days, I saw nothing of her, and although I threw my flowers as usual, no flower came to keep it company. However, after a time, she reappeared, dressed in black and crying often, and then I knew that the poor child's mother was dead, and, as far as I knew, she was alone in the world. The flowers came no more for many days, nor did she show any sign of recognition, but kept her eyes on her work, except when she placed her handkerchief to them. And opposite to her was the old lady's chair, and I could see that, from time to time, she would lay down her work and gaze at it, and then a flood of tears would come to her relief. But at last one day she roused herself to nod to me, and then her flower came, day by day, and my flower went forth to join it. And with varying fortunes, the two flowers sailed away, as of yore. But the darkest day of all to me was when a good-looking young gondolier, standing right end uppermost in his gondola, for I could see him in the flesh, worked his craft alongside the house and stood talking to her as she sat on the balcony. They seemed to speak as old friends. Indeed, as well as I could make out, he held her by the hand during the whole of the interview, which lasted quite half an hour. Eventually, he pushed off and left my heart heavy within me. But I soon took heart of grace, for as soon as he was out of sight, the little maid threw two flowers growing on the same stem, an allegory of which I could make nothing until it broke upon me that she meant to convey to me that he and she were brother and sister, and that I had no cause to be sad. And thereupon, I nodded to her cheerily, and she nodded to me, and laughed loud, and I laughed in return, and all went on as before. Then came a dark and dreary time, for it became necessary that I should undergo treatment that confined me absolutely to my bed for many days, and I worried and fretted to think that the little maid and I should see each other no longer, and worse still, that she would think I had gone away without even hinting to her that I was going. And I lay awake at night wondering how I could let her know the truth, and 50 plans flitted through my brain, all appearing to be feasible enough at night, but absolutely wild and impractical in the morning. One day, and it was a bright day indeed for me, the old woman who tended to me told me that a gondolier had inquired whether the English senor had gone away or had died, and so I learned that the little maid had been anxious about me, and that she sent her brother to inquire, and the brother had no doubt taken her the reason for my protracted absence from the window. From that day, and ever after, during my 3 weeks of bed keeping, a flower was found every morning on the ledge of my window, which was within easy reach of anyone in a boat. And when at last a day came when I could be moved, I took my accustomed place on the sofa at the window, and the little maid saw me, and stood on her head, so to speak, and clapped her hands upside down with delight that was as eloquent as my right end up delight could be. And so the first time the gondolier passed my window, I beckoned to him, and he pushed alongside and told me, with bright smiles, that he was glad indeed to see me well again. Then I thanked him and his sister for their many kind thoughts about me during my retreat, and I then learnt from him that her name was Angela, and that she was the best and purest maiden in all of Venice, and that anyone might think himself happy indeed who could call her sister, but that he was happier even than her brother, for he was to be married to her, and indeed they were to be married the next day. Thereupon my heart seemed to swell to bursting, and the blood rushed through my veins so that I could hear it and nothing else for a while. I managed at last to stammer forth some words of awkward congratulation, and he left me, singing merrily, after asking permission to bring his bride to see me on the morrow as they returned from church. "For," said he, "my Angela has known you very long, ever since she was a child, and she's often spoke to me of the poor Englishman who was a good Catholic and who lay all day for years and years on a sofa at a window, and she said over and over again how dearly she wished she could speak to him and comfort him. And one day, when you threw a flower into the canal, she asked me whether she might throw another, and I told her yes, for he would understand that it meant sympathy for one sorely afflicted. And so I learned that it was pity and not love, except indeed such love as an akin to pity, that prompted her to interest herself in my welfare. And there was an end to it all. For the two flowers that I thought were on one stem were two flowers tied together, but I could not tell that. And they were meant to indicate that she and the gondolier were affianced lovers, and my expressed pleasure at this symbol delighted her, for she took it to mean that I rejoice in her happiness. And the next day, the gondolier came with a train of other gondoliers, all decked in their holiday garb, and on his gondolier sat Angela, happy and blushing at her happiness. Then he and she entered the house in which I dwelt and came into my room, and it was strange indeed, after so many years of inversion, to see her with her head above her feet. And then she wished me happiness and a speedy restoration to good health, which could never be. And I, in broken words and with tears in my eyes, gave her the little silver crucifix that stood by my bed or my table for so many years. And Angela took it reverently and crossed herself and kissed it, and so departed with her delighted husband. And as I heard the song of the gondoliers as they went their way, the song dying away in the distance as the shadows of the sundown closed around me, I felt that they were singing the requiem of the only love that had ever entered my heart.